Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my good friend, Mr. Patrick Irvin. Remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX, Inc. That's PACTSINC, and PAX, Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information about PAX, Inc., make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization. As we've told you before, learn more about the codes of conduct that we've created, learn more about the members, how you can donate to the organization, as well as the educational center that they have. Tons and tons of educational material for the black community. So once again, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. As well, while you're online, as you already know, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com, where you can learn everything you need to know about the network. We just started a new podcast, the Enigma Self Hour, which will be live every Friday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the Freedom Train Network, as well as the Enigma Self Hour YouTube channel. And as you know, follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, we're on that Freedom Train Network, Instagram Freedom Train Network, Facebook, YouTube Freedom Train Network, and you can follow us on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Now, we're excited about this month because it's our Mental Health Awareness Month, and every August we're dedicating our shows, our PSAs, and different messages to bringing more awareness about mental health in the black community. Patrick, what's going on, my brother?
Not much, man. We just also want to send a shout out to the Source Radio Network, Source Radio Nation. They have agreed to join in on the August Black Mental Health Awareness.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And put a shout out to we got a show, another teen show coming up called Hakira. And that's in its final stages right now. So she's 16 years old, and she's going to be talking about 16-year-old stuff.
So, teen issues.
Yeah, teen issues, bullying, body shaming. Her first three or four episodes that I've listened to so far have been on bullying, body shaming, clicks, and the last one escapes me right now. But you know, so that's coming up for all of the young people, or for the people that are interested in hearing what young people have to say about certain issues. So there you go. Also, the app on Google Play, the Google Play Store, the radio network, radio station right now is pumping our shows, all of the shows that we have for the week on an 8-hour loop during the weekend. And during the week, the radio station is going to start pumping out for at least 4 hours on a two-rotation loop. So for 8 hours a day, you'll be getting some of the classic speeches from some of the master teachers of the past and from some that are still doing it if they give us their permission to do it. So you'll be getting speeches from Dr. Garvey. I'm sorry, not Dr. Garvey, Marcus Garvey. You'll be getting speeches from Amos Wilson, Dr. John Henry Clark. So all of those guys, you'll be getting their speeches and plenty of other people as well. So look out for
that. The community need that info. Yeah. So like I said, it's August, man. I'm excited because once again, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. And this first interview that we have is one that's special to me. This woman, to me, embodies what it is to be pro-black, what it is to be a person of African descent who loves themselves and goes out of their way to make sure that the future generations have that love for self. So I'm talking about Dr. Huberta Jackson Lohman, who is a full professor of psychology in the Department of Psychology at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida, and the past department chair. She teaches graduate and undergraduate courses at FAMU's Department of Psychology, which is the only psychology department in the U.S. that claims an African-centered thrust. So shout out to my department. She is the editor of the anthology African-American Women Living at the Crossroads of Race and Gender, Class and Culture. She currently serves as the president of the National Association of Black Psychologists, which is composed of psychologists of African ancestry in the United States and around the world. She is certified through the Association of Black Psychologists as a diplomat and fellow in African-centered psychology. So I want everybody around here to get up and put your hands together for Dr. Huberta Jackson Lohman. Welcome her to the studio. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Dr. Jackson Lohman, for being on here with us today.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you all for the work that you're doing. It is tremendous, and it is so important.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, Patrick, you got the first question. Let's kick this off.
All right. So, Joe knows you. He went to school. He sings your praises every single time I talk to him about black mental health issues. So I have a level of respect for you as well, because Joe is stubborn and hard-headed, and anybody that can get him to praise them to the level that he praises you must be significant. He also has a lot of hate in him. But I was wondering if you could just for those of us who aren't as familiar with you, our listeners that aren't as familiar with you, could you give a little bit more of your background information and how you became passionate about helping to improve the black community and mental health in the black community?
Okay. Well, my background, as you indicated, is in clinical psychology. But I have done a little bit of everything. As you indicated, I am currently a professor in the Department of Psychology at FAMU. But I've also worked in a variety of different capacities. Before coming to Tallahassee, I was in private practice in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania for about 15 years. And I also had a consulting firm with three other black women psychologists. And we implemented retreats and workshops and trainings that were focused on black women. While I was living in Pittsburgh, I also headed up a community initiative that was developed by our then mayor, Mayor Caligiuri, that addressed the high black infant mortality rate in Pittsburgh. And I also worked as a psychologist in the state mental health institution. So I've actually done a lot of different things as a psychologist. I guess I could say my interest in psychology began I think I've always had an interest now that I think about it. But I think what consolidated my interest and my commitment to getting my degree in this field was I took a course in high school, a psychology course. And I had always been one of those people who was like, you know, I want to understand my family better kind of a thing. Right. And so I took the course, and it was very intriguing. I loved it. And I decided at that particular point when I was in high school that I was going to go ahead and pursue a degree in psychology. I had always had friends who would come to me with their problems also, so it was kind of like, you know, something that I enjoyed dealing with. And so once I got in college and I entered major of psychology and got my bachelor's degree, and then after I got my bachelor's degree, I was kind of exhausted with school, so I thought, well, I'll just take a year off. And I did take a year off. And I worked as a counselor at an employment agency and realized that that was not something that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I went back to school, got my master's at Wichita State, and then went from there and got my doctorate at the University of Pittsburgh. And here I am now.
Okay. Now that's interesting. I always find it interesting how people find their paths or find their passions, because sometimes it's not necessarily the ideas or the paths that we were taking when we were young, growing up. It may not have been something that's part of us, but I'm always intrigued about how a person became interested in something in a professional field or and what keeps them going. So that's very interesting. I'm glad you shared that. So I want to know, from your professional opinion and from your experience, why is it important for Black people in America, but Black people period around the world, but why is it important for us to pay more attention to our mental health care within America?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to understand is that we as African Americans and people of African ancestry have been dealing with cultural trauma that dates back to the beginning of our enslavement as African people. And so we've been experiencing trauma beginning with our captivity when we were taken away from our families and our villages and forced to take those very, very long treks to the coast. And then held in slave dungeons for sometimes up to a month in horrible conditions. And then that, of course, was followed by being put on this ship and taking these long journeys across the ocean in chains, not being able to move, having to urinate and defecate in spaces where we were chained together. Women were often being raped on these ships. Bodies were being thrown overboard. People were committing suicide. And then we get to this country. And what happens is that we're being, again, placed on auction blocks.
Right.
Inspected like animals and sold to the highest bidder. And while enslaved and our families are broken up without any regard to our relationships, our children are separated from their mothers, husbands from wives. And when we have our babies, we're not often allowed to take care of them. We were not allowed to take care of them very often. And we would often have to leave them in hammocks while we were out in the field. And sometimes we would come back and they would be dead. We experienced physical abuse, horrific physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. All of this went on during our enslavement. But then after chattel slavery ended, we had a very brief respite. But the Black Codes and Jim Crow followed shortly afterward. And so we have continued to live in a society where even though the Dred Scott law was eventually rescinded, this society functions as if there are no rights that white people have to respect with regard to Black people. We continue to experience assault at the hands of the police. Unfortunately, in our own families and communities, by our educational system, criminal justice system, juvenile justice system, child welfare system, all the systems. And so what neuroscientific research has revealed is that trauma becomes embodied. It becomes a part of our bodies. So in other words, what happens is that we internalize that, and it affects our brain development. It affects the size of our brains and different parts of our brains. It affects how we function. It affects the expression of our genes even, and how we deal with our emotions and our behavior. And then we transmit this trauma from one generation to the next generation. So if we want to understand the impact of the trauma in our lives, then we have to appreciate why we experience, we have to acknowledge, rather, that it is a trauma that is a factor in all the violence that we experience in our families and communities. And also that this is a factor in some of the many of the difficulties, I should say, in our relationships, whether they are personal or business, It's often a factor in terms of why it is that we have trouble trusting each other and working together.
Right.
So we have this unrelenting experience of trauma, and that, I believe, is a primary source of our mental health issues. And if we don't recognize that, then we will never be able to effectively deal with this impact on us.
Okay. See, now, that's, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's, I love the way you put that, because that, I think that was very profound, because I've heard people talk about the generational, I don't like to use the word generational curse, but the continued oppression that we get, and I've heard people kind of lightly touch on the expressions and the genetics and just the psychological trauma, but the way you just put it, it made sense. The way you articulated it, it made sense that if one generation is facing this, the next generation, and there's no breakage of the cycle, how it literally affects the next generations, rather than just saying, hey, well, this affects the next generation. Because I think a lot of people kind of say that, just leave that open. But I like the way you articulate it, because you made every point connect and make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, we are very, unaware of the long-term and insidious effect of living in these kinds of oppressive conditions, and how that has affected us, and why it is that we experience some of the challenges that we experience in our lives, in our families, in our communities. So this is very important, that we begin to connect the dots and to acknowledge that we are human, and human beings are going to be impacted by these kinds of experiences. We're not machines. And
right.
So for us to appreciate that we are human means that as human beings, then when we are living under these kinds of conditions, then we are naturally going to have some very devastating, they're naturally going to have some very devastating effects on us.
Okay.
And you also just very eloquently described epigenetics. And, you know, I've been on that for a while, trying to get people to understand that everything you just said is, you know, like we used to call it genetic memory. We used to call it cultural memory. We used to call it all these terms, and now they have an official scientific term for it that lays out how exactly these issues that one generation has gets passed on to the next generation. So, you know, it was especially powerful as well in that point. But how do we get people how do we heal people from an issue that they refuse to accept is an issue, especially with regards to racism and white supremacy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first we need to recognize that one of the things that happens under racism and white supremacy is that we often internalize the messages and the stereotypes and the myths, the lies that are told about us. But we may internalize the fact that they say that we are not as physically attractive, that we're not as mentally capable or emotionally stable as whites, and that we often begin to believe ourselves that we haven't contributed anything of value under as a people to the world. So one of the things that's happening, you know, living under these oppressive conditions, is that it destroys our sense of human dignity and our self-respect, because it blocks our access to our true identity. So oppression creates these systematic barriers to our human development, because it blocks access to the resources that we need to facilitate our development, whether it's in education, whether it has to do with entry into business, or obtaining jobs. And as a result of these things, then we begin to develop these responses to them that may be unhealthy. So sometimes we develop conditions. I know Dr. Akbar, Naeem Akbar, who I know you're familiar with, has talked a great deal about this. He talks about mental conditions that he calls things like alien self-disorder, which basically has to do with rejecting our identity and also rejecting those who look like us. And living with this sense of denial about the reality of injustice that we have faced as a people and continue to face. And then he identifies conditions like anti-self disorder, which involves a more extreme condition of self-hatred and this belief that if I'm different from other Black people, then and white people acknowledge that, then I'm better. He also talks about self-destructive disorders, which some of us engage in, doing things that are not only harmful to ourselves, but also harmful to each other, like pimping and prostituting and pushing drugs and things. And, you know, and not to say that I don't want to be too overly simplistic about this, because there are a lot of reasons why people engage in these behaviors. But these are some of the things that are kind of related to living under these conditions. But in order for us to heal from it, we have to begin to learn and appreciate who we are as people of African ancestry. I think the work that you all talked about at the very beginning, sharing the messages from people like Marcus Garvey and Francis Cress Welsing and John Henry Clark and Naeem Akbar, and we can go on and on, sharing those that kind of information, which begins to challenge the messages that we have been imbued with constantly, you know, by the media, and also by the lack of representation of our history in the history books. That those are, that's one of the key strategies, I think, for beginning to help people to begin to examine what their beliefs are and why it is that they're behaving the way that they're behaving, and begin to appreciate their true identity. Another strategy that, you know, that perhaps I can talk a little bit about is that we've been using is the Emotional Emancipation Circle. And this is was something that was developed by the Community Healing Network in collaboration with the Association of Black Psychologists. And basically what they are is these structured circles which are facilitated by trained facilitators using a curriculum that we have developed that is focused on debunking the myths of Black inferiority. And so essentially what the curriculum is doing is challenging these myths and confronting the various ways that the myth of Black inferiority shows up in our lives, and also helping to begin to reveal the truth about who we are as African people.
Yes, ma'am. Now, last year's Community Healing Days, and we'll get more into Community Healing Days in a minute, but last year at Community Healing Days, the Emotional Emancipation Circle that we were in, it was very, very, very powerful, because we had young men in there speaking about how they feel trapped in the man box, and this European idealistic man box, how they felt trapped into the man box and couldn't express themselves emotionally in a healthy manner because of what they were taught and how they were limited as far as expressing themselves. And I know I tried to let one of the young men know that you're a human being and you have the capacity to express the full range of human emotions. And just the over the last 3 years, being able to participate in the circles and listen to the dialogue and look at the people before the circles and after the circles, and kind of see how for some people like some of the weight kind of came off their shoulders because they had the chance to sit around with other people who had similar experiences and who was able to seek some kind of help or healing. So those circles are very, very, very powerful. I appreciate you for conducting those and having those available for the community and just for other people as well.
Yes, yes. It's very important for us to have spaces where we can come and feel safe and talk about those kinds of deep issues that are really affecting us and impairing our ability to have healthy relationships with each other.
So I want to talk a bit about the stigma that mental health care has in the Black community. Just trying to get your opinion on why do you think our community stigmatizes mental health care, and in your opinion, what are some things that we could do to kind of reverse that stigma?
Well, one thing I would say is that it's not really just our community that stigmatizes it. This is something that is a phenomenon in this country and in other places in the world, too. But we're talking about this country in particular. But this occurs in a larger society as well. And I think that one of the things that happens is that because we are already being inferiorized in so many different ways, to acknowledge mental health issues, maybe to acknowledge something that is considered to be another indication that we are inferior. So, you know, we don't want to do that. But the other thing, too, I think I would point out is that we have a tendency to separate mental health from physical health and from our emotional and spiritual well-being. And we act as if these things are not intertwined. So we need to begin to recognize that these are all connected, and that and to recognize that when one aspect of our being is affected, parallel effects are being manifested in other aspects of our being. And so, as Brother Patrick had just mentioned more earlier, the emerging field of epigenetics is recognizing that and is examining the impact of the environment on our bodies and its functioning. And so what we now are realizing is that the environments that we in influence our body and its functioning. And we now, I think, are becoming more aware of the fact that our brain is a malleable organ, or what we talk about as neuroplasticity is one way of describing that, and that how our brains develop and function depends upon what we do on a day-to-day basis and the kinds of environments that we're occupying. So not to stray too much, you know, one of the things that is being recognized is that our use of our internet and our cell phones and smartphones and things is having a serious impact on our brain. So that's just one example of that.
Right.
But when we begin to recognize that the mental disorders actually just reflect imbalances in our lives, just like physical disorders, then perhaps we can begin to learn to approach them without such a sense of shame or fear and guilt, and you know, also begin to recognize that there is, even though it appears that we're separate from our environment, in fact, we are not. And that whenever there's an imbalance, then that's going to be manifested. And it can be manifested physically, mentally, emotionally, or behaviorally in any of those ways. But whatever is manifested on any level is going to have similar manifestations on other levels of our being. So if we have some physical issues, we know this is true in terms of conditions like diabetes and hypertension, then there are psychological effects also that just having that particular condition can create in our bodies, and vice versa. You know, when something is happening at the mental level, it can affect us physically.
Okay. That's something to note. I don't hear that often, that the mental affects the physical, because I know I mostly hear that the physical can eventually affect the mental, so we kind of think about that, but not necessarily the mental affecting the physical, even though that does make sense, but it's just not articulated or even spoken about on a regular basis, so I'm glad you said that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we have a category of disorders somatic disorders and psychosomatic disorders, which addresses the impact of the mental on the body. You know, so some people can end up with various conditions like paralysis even, or blindness or deafness, and there could be no physical basis for it. And then after undergoing a series of tests and there's no physical basis identified, then what is concluded very often is that this is something that's associated with a mental condition.
Okay. That's interesting.
So you're a trained psychologist. Was there anything given to you or taught to you during your training that I'm trying to figure out how to word it, that actually helped you in terms of dealing with some of the issues presented in the Black community?
Well, I would say that I had to get that kind of training outside of my training in the academy, because everything tends to focus on the Western Eurocentric way of looking at mental health issues. And, you know, and not that some of that can be useful, but, you know, we have to take everything with more than a grain of salt, actually. And also we need to recognize, too, that in terms of psychology, we have a lot of different theoretical perspectives in terms of how we even understand why it is people are suffering from different issues. So depending upon what particular perspective you happen to take, then your identification of what the ideological factors are may vary. So, you know, if we're just thinking about traditional Western psychology, you know, which has been what, when we go to most of the institutions, what we get trained in, then we have theories like the Freudian or psychoanalytic or psychodynamic theories that would suggest that a lot of the mental disorders that people experience are due to their traumatic childhood experiences, and that these become buried in their unconscious. And so now some of these things that we see in some of these what we identify as a Western or Eurocentric theories have actually come from people of African ancestry, but they have never acknowledged this. So a lot of what Freud has developed actually came from his study of ancient Kemet, we're now realizing. So he focuses a lot on dreams, and he uses strategies like free association, where people just say whatever comes to mind in relationship to a stimulus to help them to uncover repressed experiences and bring them back into consciousness and help them to work through it. So that's just one approach. And then we have the humanistic approaches that emphasize human potential, and they focus on things like self-acceptance and being genuine, unconditional, positive regard in order to promote healing. And, you know, again, these things can also be helpful with us in some instances, but we also need to go further. They have behavioral theories that stress how the relationship between a stimulus and response, and then try to alter those relationships in order to strengthen certain desired behaviors and eliminate behaviors that are not desirable. And one of the approaches that's very popular today is the cognitive behavior approach, which stresses the relationship between our thoughts and our beliefs and the emotions and behaviors that we exhibit. And so in that approach, they may be trying to increase our awareness of these thoughts and change them, help us to change them, recognize them, and then change them, and learn different strategies for managing these things, which might include things like relaxation and mindfulness and those kinds of things. I tend to lean more towards the ecological theories that and these theories suggest that our behavior is really a function of the environments that we're in, and they can be proximal as well as what we call distal. The proximal has to do with the immediate environments. It might be the impact of our family, of our neighborhood, of our peers on us, of the school settings that we happen to be in, the religious settings that we happen to be in. But also the distal factors, like the policies that are influencing the kinds of choices that we have available to us, our laws, the larger beliefs that exist in the society and our values. And all of these things then come to bear on us and influence the trajectory of our environment, would be one way of putting it. I like to operate in a more African-centered way, but that's probably the closest theory to what I would suggest has been helpful for me in terms of understanding the kinds of challenges that we have as people of African ancestry.
It feels, once you start to learn more and study more, it feels like an uphill battle. I know for me, I'm saddened when I go to work, because we do a lot of outreach and community work. And mental health is a big issue in our community. It's a huge issue. And I'm starting to notice a lot of people who aren't getting any kind of health care, whether it's for the physical body or the mental state, they're not getting any health care because of the mental health issues that they have. So, and this question is kind of off the beaten path. So for the community members that we have that seem to be neglected and thrown away, what are some things that people who may not be familiar with the psychology field, who are people who are just in the community and see somebody that they want to help, what are some things that person can do to help someone within their community who they have recognized have a mental health issue?
Well, it may not be as complicated. I think that one of the things that we need to do a better job of as just human beings in general is to listen to each other, to allow people to share without judgment. You know, because I think we tend to judge things, and that is one of the things that people fear in terms of sharing what they're actually feeling, thinking, or experiencing, that they're going to be judged, that they're going to, people are not going to want them around them anymore. They're going to lose their friends, their family members, and so on. So I think just as friends, as family members, as colleagues, that one of the things that we can do for each other is to be willing to listen to each other and not to judge each other when things are being shared. And also not to blame people for things. You know, one of the things that with the emphasis on trauma that we are beginning to see more of, actually, it's not just people of African ancestry that have been traumatized, but we've certainly been experienced a significant brunt of the trauma, but collectively we are traumatized, so that we need to stop asking people, why are they behaving the way they're behaving? We need to start asking people, what happened? What has happened to you? Because more often than not, we are responding to these unhealthy conditions that we are living with on a day-to-day basis. And so we need to be able to recognize that. And we also need to recognize when it is that people need to get professional help.
Okay.
And most of us have not been trained to be able to be psychologists or therapists or social workers. Most of us haven't been trained to do those kinds of things. And so we need to recognize and not belittle people or consider them weak because they need to get that help. So whatever we can do to help them to find the help and the resources that they need to address their concerns and their problems, then we should try our best to assist them with identifying those.
Right, so thanks for that.
Would you saying that, and that harks back to something that Joe and I talk about often, is you were talking about friendship. Is there a need, because I've always been under the impression, and I'm a psychology major as well as a psychology buff. I stopped going to school. I think I'm in that area of life that you were in when you were just tired of school. That's kind of where I am. So, I started in my PhD program, and then I just got tired of school. And but we talk about this all the time. And before I got tired of school, it was something that I would talk about with my professors a lot. But the need for some sort of friendship certification course, because it seems like there aren't a lot of people that are even certified to be good friends, much less, like prepared to be counselors or anything else. Like, if we had more real friends in the world, it seems like mental health would be better for everybody. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've never heard it put that way, but that's an excellent point. We don't have to get certified to be a friend, but maybe we should be, because, babies, they recognize the importance of human relationship. We can't be human if we don't have relationships with each other. But a lot of times, as you're pointing out, those relationships are very injurious and they're very damaging to us. We don't know how to be a friend. And, maybe it is because we have not, as you suggest, been properly trained. We don't have models. If you're looking at things in the media, it certainly is not helping us to understand what it means to be a friend. And, how you interact with a friend, if you're a friend, how you interact with them. One of the things that I really love is Proverbs. And that's one of the things that we've lost as a people. There are many different African proverbs, and there are even proverbs of African Americans that we have used from time to time that I think have been very helpful to us in terms of helping us to understand how it is that we should behave and interact with each other. So, I would not be opposed at all to, us spending more time even giving consideration to things like what does it mean to be a friend, how do friends treat each other, and helping us to develop those kinds of qualities that would, enable people to interact in a more wholesome way with each other.
Right. Yeah. That's to me, that's one of the keys that we could have for ourselves, is paying more attention, being better friends and all those things, kind of help facilitate people in their mental health process. Because sometimes friends can be communicating with you or with us, and we just put up, oh, you need to do this or do that. And even people who have issues who may go to their pastor or somebody who they trust, but that person has no mental health training. And I know that's a norm in our community, but it shouldn't be. That's like you breaking your leg and going to McDonald's. I mean, it doesn't help. So that's something I would like to see.
I don't know
more.
If it's exactly like that, Joe.
I mean, but that's extreme, but but it's I said it because it doesn't help. It's like taking you off course from what you need to be able to truly get the mental health care. Because I tell people all the time, I have a bachelor's in psychology. But if you come to me for help, I'm going to listen, and I'm going to refer you to somebody who I know can help you. Because even with my bachelor's of psychology, I'm not trained professionally to really help somebody with their mental state. So I have access to resources and people. So that's why I think people need to try to have themselves in that space as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Yeah, but, you know, our ancestors have much to share with us that we, you know, we just don't have enough knowledge about. I mentioned Proverbs earlier about some of the ways that they understood what friendship really meant. And not just friendship, a lot of different things. There's just so much that we could gain if we could do more study of our history and our culture. That would help us to be able to deal more effectively with relationships and friendships and other things as well.
Man. So the National Association of Black Psychologists, can you tell us more about the association, how it got started, and kind of the overall mission of the association?
Okay. Well, this year we celebrated our 50th anniversary. And 50 years ago, some of our now current members, who are actually our founders, walked out of the National American Psychological Association because they felt that it was not addressing the needs of people of African ancestry, and that we needed to develop our own association that would be focused on the mental health needs of people of African ancestry. And so that is what they did. And as I said, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. Actually, we just had our convention in Oakland, which is the place where we were founded 50 years ago. So our mission is the liberation of the African mind, the empowerment of the African character, and the enlivenment and illumination of the African spirit. And, you know, those are, I know, a lot of big words, but basically what we have been doing over the past 50 years is examining questions that have to do with our identity, the impact of oppression on us. And we've been doing a lot of work in terms of developing theories that were more appropriate for understanding who we are and how we function, conducting research, developing various culturally appropriate assessment strategies, and challenging this white supremacy, racism, and oppression through a lot of different approaches. And one of the ones that we've been very involved with is challenging culturally biased testing. So, over the past 50 years, we have been, every year we have a convention, and we've had, this was our 50th, as I said, this year. We provide continuing education at our convention that addresses a variety of Black mental health issues. And to, you know, help our educators as well as our healers to work more effectively with Black populations, because even those of us who have degrees, often we're not exposed to anything that had to do with African Black psychology.
Right.
You know, I remember myself as a student in the doctoral program that I didn't see anything in the textbook that related to me as a woman of African ancestry. And that really is what led me and several of my colleagues to come together and develop the first course on the psychology of Black women. We call it the Psychological Experience of Black females, I think, at the University of Pittsburgh. What we're doing is educating people around who we are as people of African ancestry and how do we work with people of African ancestry who are bringing a variety of different challenges and issues into the various settings that we happen to be working in. We've also developed a credentialing in African-centered psychology so that people can, after they meet certain requirements, then become credentialed as African in African-centered psychology. I mentioned before that we're training people to, and these are lay people, they don't have to be psychologists or, you know, have majored in psychology. We're training lay people to implement our emotional emancipation circles. And another thing that we've been involved with is our Pan-African initiative, and that has involved collaboration with Africans across the world, particularly in continental Africa, in South Africa, in Ghana, and other places around addressing mental health issues. So you know, the issues are just they're countless issues, and we are continuing to do this kind of work to begin to address the challenges that we're facing as people of African ancestry as far as our mental health is concerned.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, Community Healing Days as well. So I've definitely got to get into that because for me personally, that's one of the events that I look for every year, every round October, every year. I look to being a part of it. I look forward to gaining from it. So for those who don't know, could you tell them more about what Community Healing Days is and why it was brought to Tallahassee?
Okay. Well, Community Healing Days was developed by an organization called Community Healing Network, which is located in New Haven, Connecticut, and founded by a woman who's a lawyer by the name of Enola Aird. And she had Dr. Maya Angelou on her board. And one of Maya Angelou's commitments was to encouraging Black people to put healing on our agenda. And so that led to their developing what is called Community Healing Days. And this was supposed to be a time when we as people of African ancestry put prioritize our healing, our physical, mental, and spiritual healing. And so they established it, celebrating it the third weekend in October, the 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On Friday, the focus is on consciousness raising. So we're looking at addressing the myth of Black inferiority and how that has impacted us in so many different ways in our lives, our physical health, our functioning in our families and communities, our intellectual functioning. In every aspect of our life, we've been affected by this myth of Black inferiority. So we have done a variety of different things on that first evening, Friday, to raise awareness about the impact of the myth of Black inferiority on Black people. And so we've often used plays, we've done film or discussions about different topics and exercises and things of that sort. On the Saturday, what is done is we focus in on our health very broadly, and so we deal with physical health, and our physical health, we have in Tallahassee, one of the things that we typically do is we have yoga, we have Tai Chi, we have African dance, we have Zumba. So we have a variety of different physical activities that we offer to the community so they can begin to explore different ways for being able to become more physically active. And then we will have workshops and things that deal with mental health, that deal with financial health, and that deal with nutrition and things of that sort. And usually in the evenings on Saturday, we have some kind of a community forum where we're dealing with some significant issues about how we can function better as a community. And then on the Sunday, our focus has been on spiritual, on our creativity and tapping into our spiritual essence. And so we have invited people to come in and share their talents and their gifts. Last year, we had an essay contest. And we had for children, and they talked about how to build a better Black community, and we gave out awards for that. So the Community Healing Days, as I said, which was initiated by Community Healing Network, and the founder, Enola Aird, has been working on having the Community Healing Network celebrated throughout the country. And so I was able to, in my interactions with her, bring it to Tallahassee because I think this is something that's really important for Black people across the country. There are very few celebrations that focus specifically on our needs and our interests, and I see Community Healing Days as one of those things that is targeted to the Black community to address our needs and to address our interests and to help us to rebuild a sense of community.
Yes, and I will say for anyone, if you ever have a chance to experience Community Healing Days, you would definitely enjoy all 3 days. The dialogue is great. The information that you learn, the techniques as far as to how to better heal, healthy eating, all those things are focused on at Community Healing Days. And you will definitely enjoy it. It's for our community, and that's something I would tell anybody to go experience Community Healing Day. So before we get to our last question, I wanted to ask this. The importance of Black mental health professionals, because we all know we need more Black people in many positions, but not necessarily Black people in positions to continue the work of white America, but Black mental health professionals who can bring an African-centered approach or something close to it to be able to help more of the people in the Black community. The importance of it, could you just give us your opinion on the importance of more Black people within the mental health realm who have a focus on being African-centered and healing within the African-centered realm?
Well, I think you said it. I mean, this is extremely important. One of the reasons why a lot of our people will not seek out mental health services is because there's so few of us there. And so
right.
Many of us are looking for someone who not only just looks like us, but also understands the kinds of experiences and issues that we're facing. Now, we do need to appreciate the fact that just because we're Black does not mean that we do understand and appreciate the issues that,
right.
and the reasons why we're having the issues.
Right.
So having an African-centered thrust is extremely important. Unfortunately, as much as we need to have more mental health, Black mental health professionals, most of the institutions that we get our degrees from do not offer anything African-centered, which is why I want to encourage people, because you don't have to be a psychologist to join the Association of Black Psychologists, to join and to utilize the resources that we have available. Because I know for me, what I had to do in order to develop a more African-centered thrust is that I had to take responsibility for my own education. And
right.
What I did while I was in graduate school, because nothing really seemed to pertain to African people, I would just go over to the Black Studies Department and sit in their classes, even though I wasn't getting credit for it.
Right.
And then I joined the Association of Black Psychologists, and that also was a place that I was able to kind of continue my own education and understanding and appreciation of the challenges and issues that we face as people of African ancestry. Now, I think that we need more, but we need also, as Black mental health professionals, to be committed to undertaking this additional study, because we have to know and understand and appreciate what it is that our people have gone through historically as well as contemporarily, if we're going to be able to address their issues effectively. And that typically is not offered in most of the courses that we're going to be exposed to in the psychology and mental health counseling kinds of programs
right.
that we enter.
Right. Yeah. I know I had, before I got to FAMU, I had no idea, like, the world was the way it was. I had a little information, because my parents taught me a little bit about racism. I really didn't understand racism, but I knew there was an issue with Black and white. I knew the civil rights movement. I knew slavery. I knew some of the, we really didn't know Jim Crow. We really didn't know Black codes and all those things there. But what I really enjoy about this conversation is all of that, well, everything is being put into perspective about our mental state now, but it's also, mm-hmm. to me, it also puts things in perspective of how we can move forward as far as to further heal our people because we have people like yourself who know what we're going through, who know what's going on, and who have been working over the years to create and develop more solutions and collaborate with other people to have the solutions available for our community. So I think that helps us. I feel good about that, but I do wish that I want to see it all come together. I guess that's what I'm saying. I want to be able to see everything come together so we can effectively be able to free ourselves from these throes of white supremacy, because we know that those are the main things that is weighing on our mental state here in America.
Right. And one thing, one initiative that I'm working on launching with the association is what I call our Association of Black Psychologists Communiversity. And basically what I'm striving to do through the Communiversity is to bring these the knowledge, the resources that we've been able to gather over these past 50 years to our community, at least virtually, to be able to make the community more aware of this information, because it should not just be in a few sites like the African Center Psychology Department or in
right.
journals or at conventions. We need to make this much more accessible to the larger Black community.
Yes, ma'am.
I like that, because that's one of the goals for that our sponsor PAX has, is to make that information as widely available as possible, because, you know, like that opens the doors for people when they can get exposed to that information, get exposed to new ways of thinking, get exposed to things that are going to challenge them. I actually had a question before we get to the last question. So we've been toying with this idea, and we've been trying to pull it off of developing some sort of Black mental health hotline.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, it's a little bit, that may be a little bit challenging, because you have to have people who have credentials in order to even have something like that in place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have hotlines and things of that sort. So you may want to think about it more in terms of something that provides information as opposed to something that provides intervention, because you know, people may call and be experiencing all kinds of mental health issues, but if you're not licensed, then you could get into serious trouble if you try to offer them any kind of intervention. So I think something that focuses more on information and helping them to identify the resources that they could tap into would probably be the most beneficial.
Okay. Thank you for letting me bounce ideas off of you during this. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Yep.
All right, Joe, I'm done. I'm sorry.
Okay, now, because this is Mental Health Awareness Month, the last question is slightly different, but we're going to set it up the same. So, Patrick, you ready?
No, I'm ready to ask my original question.
It's Mental Health Awareness Month. We got different questions.
Man, you can't be changing the question up without, you is ruining my mental health right now. I hope you're aware of that.
Whatever. You're going to ask this question, okay?
I'm going to ask the original question, and we're going to, you get, oh, by the way, the Association of Black Psychologists. And see, I was in school for 18 years in psychology. I'm lying. But anyways, and nobody ever told me that this website existed until, anyways, the website is, nobody ever told me. I mean, Joe, I think you told me, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, something like that. But, the website is www.abpsi.org. I think I said that right.
That's right. That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So, right. Y'all go on over there. I'm gonna go over there and I'm gonna sign up and get me a membership, because I'm trying to do. I want to be a part of solutions. I want to be a part of any organization is doing anything beneficial. I want to be a part of it. And I think we should all support it. and I'm telling y'all, like, it's a lot of people listening to the show. We got the numbers. We see you. Go over to the website and sign up, become a member. They got a program for everybody, or a membership level for everybody. I'm sorry.
Yes, thank you so much.
No problem.
We need more folks to join, because the work that we have to do is massive. It takes many people to do this work, and we're limited by the fact that we have small numbers. And so, all those black mental health professionals out there, we welcome you into the Association of Black Psychologists, and certainly encourage you to take out a membership.
Most definitely.
Yes.
Matter of fact, right, I already got it written into my budget, so that when I get paid, y'all get paid.
All right, Joe,
you're going to join with me, right?
You know it. Let's do it. All right, you ready?
I'll send you my receipt when I do. So, you got to send me yours back.
There it is. Hey, that's a challenge we need to be taking. Before I get into that, here we go. You ready, Pat?
Nah, because I don't know what question I'm supposed to be asking. So, go ahead, Joe, because I don't know what question I'm supposed to be asking.
That's messed up. So, overall, what resources are available for our community?
Nah, you're doing that all wrong, Joe. I got it.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Do the drum roll again. Hold on.
Bring it back to the drum roll. All right, here we go.
So, what resources are available for the community members who can't afford mental health care?
That's a tough question. And it's tough because our resources seem to be so limited. And, I mentioned the Emotionally Emancipation Circles, and that's a resource that we are in the process of developing and making more available to the community. There are some licensed professionals who will do reduced rates for people, but they can only do that to a limited extent. There are community mental health centers and that people can pursue. But we do have a real shortage of mental health services for our people, and that's an area that we need to be doing a lot more work to address. I mean, there are helplines, too, hotlines, 211 is one of them, a number of suicide hotlines and things of that sort. That people can utilize to get emergency or crisis intervention. So, unfortunately, the services are limited, and that's something that we really have to work on. You know, I think that all of our religious institutions need to work on making their spaces available for mental health professionals to come in and be able to provide support, because even those who are a part of these various congregations need that help. But also they need to be open to people who are not members of their various religious organizations. So, I apologize for not being able to give a better response to this, but, we have such a limited number of services that are available for people who have limited resources. And that is something that we need to be putting our heads together as a community and working to increase the services that are available to people. We now have a chapter here in the Tallahassee, Florida area. And so I would encourage any of our Black mental health professionals as well as students to come out and join the North Florida chapter, the Association of Black Psychologists North Florida, to help us in that process of helping to create more resources for our community.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for all of the information that you were able to provide us with today. Definitely learned some new things, but you were able to, I felt like you did a great job of putting mental health into a great perspective for people to really understand why things are the way they are, and as I said earlier, to be able to build upon to help for more healing. Now, can you tell the people where they can contact you if somebody wants to learn more about you, more about Community Healing Days, more about ABCI? How could they contact you?
Okay. So for Community Healing Days, we do have a Facebook page. I think it's Tallahassee Community Healing. I think that's what it's called. I think if you put that in there, that will come up. And so they can go there, and we should be beginning to put information out about community healing. Within the next month, we should have that information out there. And they can contact me at my email address, and I can give that to you also.
Okay. All right. So, yes, what is your email?
H.Jackson dash Lowman, and Lowman is spelled Lowman, at abpsi.org.
Okay. All right. So, listeners, all our listeners, you have a good base to start with. You have information to start with. You have some resources to start with. So that was one of the main things that we want to kick off our Mental Health Awareness Month with this particular interview, so we can set the tone for one, but also background information on the mental state, on the basis or the foundation of the mental state of Black people in America, and a foundation of to build upon as far as resources that you can use to help yourself or others who may need mental health care. So once again, Dr. Jackson Lowman, thank you very, 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 very much for coming on our podcast and speaking with us and just giving your time to the community, just everything that you've done within your career for our people. Just want to thank you, and we need more people like you. We definitely need more people like you and your husband who are relentless in our community to make sure that you put the work in, and you're not just you two are not people who just go around just talking. You are action. You take action, and the community has definitely been able to benefit from you. So definitely thank you for all that you do.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity and also for the work that you all are doing. This is extremely important work. So I appreciate the opportunity to have been a part of it.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're not going to keep you on the line too much long, because we can talk. So once again, thank you. And I will be in contact with you moving forward, especially coming up to Community Healing Day.
Great. I look forward to it.
Yes, ma'am. All right. We'll speak with you soon.
Okay. Thank you now. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye. Yeah. Throw your hands in the air, Pat. Are you doing it?
Shoulder problem.
Well, nobody even gonna know. You just say yeah. But man, that was fire though. She dropped that knowledge on us.
Man, what I really need, we getting about 5-10,000 listeners, coming through on a regular basis. You know, we hitting what 30,000 a quarter, so that's 10,000 a month in terms of listeners.
Mm-hmm.
We can get 10% of y'all to go over there and become a member, and it's $250 a year. So wait for your paycheck to drop, and then go ahead and put some on it.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, we gotta start supporting this stuff. You know, because we both support PACs. And we understand, and we're both involved with PACs, and we understand the need for capital and resources to come through so that you can do things. Even you with the On the Shoulders of Giants stuff and all of the other things you got going on, even us with this radio network we got going on, man. Like, capital is needed. So, you know, we need people to stop being stingy, stop pinching your pennies. You know, I get it if you ain't got it. I'm not trying to tell nobody to break the bank or be in the dark or whatever. But, you know, if you got it, you know what I'm saying? Like, throw something out and help these organizations just trying to do the right thing.
Exactly, yeah, because you can't be a part of the population who's always complaining about what we don't have, but you never take the opportunity to contribute to the community. So if you're that person, you're not helping at all. I just want to let you know you're really not helping. So yeah, man. So as you know how we do, we're going to continue moving forward throughout this month. We have 3 more shows this month, so every show will be dedicated to mental health awareness. So next week, we're following it up. And, you know, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, man, because that's how we do right here at the Freedom Train every August. And look forward to each show on the Freedom Train Network contributing in their way, because we ain't trying to tell people how to do it, but they're going to be contributing in their way to our mental health awareness. And we want you all to become more active in your community. I mean, do what you can to help more, to just make the community better. Even if it's not in the mental health capacity, it could all lead back to improving the mental health of the community. So, you know, let's get active. I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train Podcast. And we out of here. 2 fingers in the air. Because we actually do care. But, you know,